Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still listening, we really apologise for last episode's intro. We listened back, it was terrible.
Hi guys, welcome to episode number
of Slaughter True Crime Podcast, UK Crime Podcast.
I'm gonna start with, I think it's a bit different to what I normally do. It's an interesting one in the sense that it's interesting enough that there's a BBC drama about it, but probably not many people have seen it.
Okay.
So
I would say your style was the grisly murders.
It's kind of grisly. So a lot of the information that I got for this one is from a book called Gangland, From Foot Soldiers to Kingpins, The Search for Mr. Big, which could be about horrible true crime or could be about Sex and the City Part 4.
Yeah, Sex and the City 3, Gangland. I can see that.
It's by Tony Thompson, and there's also a dramatization by the BBC, and you can find it on YouTube if you search for My Murder Part 1. And there's, I think there's 6 parts, but it's not like one of these Shannon Matthews type dramatizations that people go crazy for. It's sort of like a probably just played in schools.
Oh, okay.
So this is the story of Shaquilis Townsend, and he was a 15-year-old black lad living in South London. Really good looking boy. He wanted to go to college. He wasn't part of the South London gangs. Have you heard much about sort of these?
I don't know any denominations.
No.
I don't know.
I think you wouldn't unless you lived around there. It's not like everyone's clued up on the gangs of South London, but I think a lot of people are aware there's a lot of gang violence going on. It is largely in the black communities. It's very territorial. So that's kind of, it's still happening now. This is 2008, but a lot of violence in South London.
I think when things happen in the news, when attacks happen in the news, they're really loath to link it to gangs, aren't they?
Yeah, they make it about the individuals, don't they? He wasn't part of these gangs necessarily, but just by living there, he was sort of, you either respect the gangs or you don't. So he would like walk through gang territory because he'd want to walk home the fast way. And by doing that, it would incite a fight or an attack on himself. And then he'd have to stick up for himself.
Oh, God.
So it wasn't like he was out trying to cause trouble, but he also wasn't like, I'm going to just do what they say. So, and it was like lads he'd gone to school with and stuff. It wasn't like all these big, bad gang.
So he was really like, that's incredibly brave. So he was just like, I'm going to go against these gangs and
yeah,
suffer
just
the
like,
consequences.
I want to walk in this way, so what? No. But so he was known to a certain gang that I'm going to mention a bit, but as sort of like a, we don't like him.
Right.
So when he was on a bus somewhere in London travelling, he met a 15-year-old Samantha Joseph on the top deck, and they started chatting and they exchanged numbers, and he thought she was like super hot, like amazing dream girl basically.
That sounds like a really good premise for a date. I say really good, it sounds like a premise for a dating show that's already happened, Top Deck Dating, where they just shove a load of people on a bus and make them drive in a circular route until someone ends up dating.
One of my colleagues said to me the other day, oh, did you know that there was a train that broke down on the way to London for 8 hours? And I was like, do you think they all were like super good friends by the end of it? And she was like, no, I think they all hated each other by the end of it. Could have gone either way. Maybe there's a romance story in there somewhere, yeah, though.
Something about the vibrations of the seats might be conducive. You don't have to include this, but I have... You know, you shouldn't have regrets, but one time I was on a train back from London and I was chatting to the person next to me for the whole way back.
Boy or girl?
Boy. And then I was... The stupid bit when you think about it, I was maybe 26 and I think he was 24. And at the end, when he was getting off at his stop, he asked for my number and I was like, oh, I think you're too young for me.
What?
I know. And I'm like, that could have been that train romance. Could have been the great romance of the century. But I was like, oh God, a 24-year-old.
You were in another school year.
Yeah, right.
Like, who cares about that? At 26.
Yeah, I was a bitch at 26. I think it was negging. I was like, why are you checking your phone? No one's even going to call you. I think it was stuff like that.
Brilliant. So Shaquilla became totally obsessed with Samantha, but she had a secret.
She was a mole in Top Deck Dating.
I'm
planning the whole series.
She's sort of like a mole. She had a boyfriend who was one of the gang leaders.
So she was a plant?
No, that she wasn't sent in to date him.
Right.
She just met him, but she was already dating this guy called Danny McLean, who was 18. He was a gang leader. I mean, the gang leaders are like 18. This is not like grown-up gangs. And he was...
It's different to organised crime, as we would call it, isn't it?
So his gang was called the Shine My Nine Gang, which apparently refers to a gun, not giving a well-endowed guy a blowjob.
I immediately thought that was a dick.
Shine my nine. Like,
yeah.
Come on, give it a little shine.
Polish my nine.
Yeah. So.
Oh, is that like a 9mm? I'm so bad on guns. This is going to be terrible.
So Samantha continued to see Shaquilla, but she told him when they were out that he had to say he was her cousin.
This is so Romeo and Juliet.
So she lived with her mum, and her mum was called Sheila, and she was like a head chef at a pub in Broccoli. So like working hard, unsociable hours. So I think like she was single mum in the sense that her Samantha's father and brother lived in Trinidad still.
Bringing her up on her own.
Make money, keep her daughter safe, living in South London, send money back to her family as well. And they had been like really close, Samantha and her mum, but I think just because mum was working a lot and then Samantha had a lot of freedom and she had been a really good student at school, but then she started to get noticed by the boys. She like kind of became like one of the hot girls of school. And then spending a lot of time with them and then get drawn into these gangs. So initially she'd been quite doing well. So she got with Danny McLean when he had spotted her and kind of been like, right, I'm going to date her. Like, I'm gang leader. I get to choose sort of my pick of the girls around here. And they were sleeping together really soon, despite the fact that he was 18 and she was 15. And then she just was like part of this gang culture then. Like, she was targeted for fights. She got excluded because of fighting in school. She had to go to study at a specialist education centre, which I think like must be so heartbreaking for London teachers. So you've got a good student, you've got good plans for them, and then suddenly something like that happened. They just start dating the wrong person, and then you can just see them throwing their lives away.
Because you just want to grab them and be like, no.
You could be good. Yeah, really sad. Like, making the wrong choices and then that's it, really. And it must be really, really hard.
I mean, it's heartbreaking for everyone because her mum's having to work, moved over to England, having to work that hard to provide this life that she wants her children to have.
Yeah.
And then it's not going as planned.
Yeah. So Shaquilla's tried to maintain his position as the other man, like making sure she didn't dump him by like buying her a lot of gifts and things. And I think there was a bit of like the chocolates and the flowers, but he was planning on getting her a puppy. Like, he was taking a step up, which like you should really check before you buy people puppies.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if I turned up like, for Christmas, Emma, I bought you this puppy.
That always annoys me in films where people will walk in with a box and in the box is a puppy. It's not scratching or moving around, but there it is, it's a puppy. And where's the rest of the gifts? If you're buying a dog for someone, there should be a whole like truckload of things. The beds, the bowls, the foods, the lead, the toys. It's just, here's a puppy, let it fend for itself.
Yeah, here's an obligation.
Yeah.
Off you go. So... On the other hand, like, she was with McLean and I think she sort of liked the status of it, but her relationship with him was more of a, let's have sex and you're welcome. Like, he was just like, there wasn't any romance. He was just like, right, come around, let's do it, off you go. And he was also pretty aggressive, and he was kind of violent as well, and would sometimes hit her. So it wasn't a good relationship. It wasn't like she was getting much out of it, other than the fact that he was sort of this gang leader and could, I guess, protect her or are going to get their stuff. So Shaquilla and McLean had actually met once. So the other man had met the boyfriend, but like she went along with this story. She told him that he was her cousin, and they got on fairly well. But Shaquilla, he just knew he couldn't take on McLean. He wanted Samantha to be his girlfriend properly. He wanted to be out and about with it. But
he'd be taking on the whole gang, yeah, wouldn't he, if he pissed him off?
So he just thought, well, I'll wait it out. I'll wait till they break up. So he just sort of carried on this role as like the guy in the sidelines. So then things changed because Samantha confided in one of her friends about Shaquilla. So she told this friend that she was dating a guy on the side and that he was giving her a lot of stuff, but that Danny McLean didn't know. And this friend went straight to Danny McLean and told him. Now, what? Obviously, he was fucking fuming. He'd been, like, for a month. He'd been with her for 18 months. And then for a month, she'd been hanging out with this other guy. I don't know if it was a sexual relationship. I don't know if they'd been kissing. But it was romantic. And he quickly found out that Shaquilla was this guy that the gang didn't like either, for not sort of following the rules of the gang. So that made it even worse. God.
Why, like, would the friend do that?
I know, what a dick.
Like, I'm not saying I'd agree with it, but if you wanted to cheat on Luke, I wouldn't tell anyone.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't, would you? It's not fair.
Like, it's fine. Go ahead. I'll just tell the podcast.
So Shaquilla also had previously been in a fight, one of these fights where he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and then he'd been attacked by someone, and he could really stand up for himself, and he'd thrown one punch and knocked out the two front teeth of one of the gang members. So he'd sort of been responsible for this guy probably having some ridiculous nickname. So again, they weren't too keen on him. So then Danny McLean's absolutely fuming that it's this guy in particular, of all guys. So Samantha did the age-old Love Island response when you're torn between two men and one finds out about the other and dumps you. She tells them she'll do absolutely anything to get taken back by Danny because she's actually really in love with him and wants him. McLean's version of anything was basically, show me that you really choose me over Shaquilla by leading him into a honey trap so that he could attack him.
No.
Which is why this is quite a well-known story, because of the manipulation and the trust being broken. So Shaquilla had heard rumours that McLean was after him, but he wasn't particularly worried. Like, he could stand up for himself. He wasn't in a gang, but he did have a criminal record and he had been to a young offenders institution. So he wasn't like this perfect schoolboy. His mum's said that he was really trying to go to college and that he was trying to change his behaviours. But then there's also some stuff about how he had like a profile on, was it Bebo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he had, like, pictures of him with a knife on it and stuff. And,
oh, great.
I don't know. So I wouldn't say that he's, like, oh, this perfect, like, geeky guy, but he wasn't involved in the gangs any. I think...
So we don't need to get too overboard with, like, he was such a hero.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just sad for everyone. So it's worth mentioning, though, that some of the boys in these gangs had missed opportunities and weren't sort of like these old, just always negative gang kids. Two of them had been going to a street dance session and showing quite a lot of promise and could have been part of a street dance group, but then they stopped going because they had to cross another gang's turf. So it meant that they had to like pack it in and start not going to those sessions, and that could have been a way out. A lot of these dancing groups are set up to sort of help with gang violence and things. And then there's another one who'd been to private school and he played for a local rugby club. And so he had a lot going for him, but just ended up hanging out with the wrong people, I guess. So on the morning of the honey trap, Samantha told a friend what was going to happen. And this friend, as she remembers, told her it's wrong, that Shaquilla is innocent, as he didn't know that she had a boyfriend at first. But Samantha says either me or Shaquilla is going down. So... and also, he punches the guy's teeth out. It's not just about the relationship.
So, if she's saying it's either me or Shaquilla is going down, do you think she feared for her life?
Well, I don't know, because a lot of the aftermath of this crime, she reportedly doesn't show much remorse. So I don't know if it's a front. I don't know if she genuinely... The portrayal in the drama, which I haven't watched, but I think it does try and show the pressure on her rather than her just being like, yeah, this is great. So,
yeah. I mean, even if she wasn't fearing for her life, I'm sure there would have been some horrendous repercussions if she'd have refused Danny McLean. Definitely. I'm not saying that she could have said no. I was just interested.
Yeah, I'm not sure is the answer to that. So one afternoon in July 2008, Samantha asked Shaquilis to meet up, and she says she wants him to meet her cousin. So he thinks, brilliant, I'm back in. She's introducing me to some family members. Like, this is like the start of our relationship, getting back together again. So they get the bus together. Reportedly, she's wearing a see-through dress in a lot of news reports, but I couldn't find any evidence of this see-through dress. I'm not sure how see-through it was. But Shaquilis' mum calls him when they're on the bus on the way to meet this cousin. And he talks to his mum. And while he's doing that, Samantha sends McLean text messages saying, we're on the way. This is the time we're going to get there. And they get off the bus. And she leads Shaquilis down a quiet road. And as they walk down, Shaquilis hears, get him, he's over there. And six lads in bandanas run towards him. And some are on bicycles as well. So he's got no chance. So he tries to run. He's caught by the lads and they start hitting him with baseball bats. Now, obviously, he's unarmed. He's got nothing to defend himself. And Samantha apparently was standing there laughing, which is where sort of my sympathy for her sort of wears thin a little bit.
Right.
They then begin stabbing Shaquilis. So McLean is, I think, the fifth one to stab him. And he literally, like, twists the knife. And I think it goes into Shakir's liver. So it's really serious at this point. And then he's hit again with a bat. And then they run off. And residents come out of their homes. And they find Shaquilis in the street screaming, I don't want to die. And he's crying for his mom. And just, it's really sad. And then he dies in hospital a few hours later. It's just so senseless. It's needless. But... it's like in London. It's just such a prosperous city. Like British people are like seen as sort of civilized and going out for tea. And then you've got this stabbing in the street. It's just, I know it does happen, but it just seems so unnecessary. So Samantha and McLean walked away from the crime and they went to buy plasters because McLean had a cut on his head where Shaquilis had been defending himself. And then they tried to log on to Shaquilis's Bebo account or Facebook and stuff. Same. Just to like delete the accounts or delete the fact that he's friends with them or something. They're trying to cover the tracks basically.
So there's no links.
Yeah. And then she phones some of her friends and says, delete Shaquilis's number. You don't want to be seen as being connected to him. Which obviously that's all too late anyway. They can look at his phone and find whatever was on there at the time. So police began investigating the murder and Samantha told them that she'd left Shaquilis at the bus stop. So she said that she'd been with him, but then she'd left and gone somewhere else. But eyewitnesses have said that they saw her with McLean, that they saw her around in this see-through dress apparently. So she was arrested. And then some other members of the gang were arrested. So online, Shaquilis' friends and supporters and members of the McLean's gang begin this sort of online feud as well, making threats, some boasting about the murder, some doing nice things. Like on YouTube, there's a memorial video where they've got pictures of Shaquilis on there, and like people have written comments from his friends saying what a great guy he was and how sad they are. So I watched that and it did make me feel like really bummed, sad. Then it all went to trial. So there was CCTV evidence and there were witnesses. So essentially they were all implicated in the murder. But Samantha received a minimum of 10 years despite the fact that she didn't actually inflict any actual harm on him. But because of her role in inviting him to the like area, I guess they say, well, there wouldn't have been a murder. Yeah. So I think another reason why it hit the headlines so much, because this idea of like the honey trap, him being led by this woman. So she got a minimum 10 years. McLean got a minimum of 15 years. And there were five others who were also sent to prison for like between 14 and 17 years. Now, Shaquille had previously told his mother how special Samantha was and that he was hoping to marry her, which is also, like, just makes it even worse. Like, he properly thought she was amazing. She only said...
Which makes it seem really bizarre, though, that she... Like, could she be that good an actress that... Why would she spend time alone with him and so that he would feel that they had something really strong? Yeah. But then also do that and be cold. Like, she must have... It must be a front. There must be some part... That is.
It's hard to get the information. I was watching a video of the director of the BBC like dramatization, and he said the news just reported the facts, so I had to fill in the blanks. So he sort of invented these characters to an extent because they're not talking out about it, and the media just focuses on the facts because what else can you do? There's no documentation of their relationship, so you can watch that and kind of see that's like a maybe it was like this. But it's really hard with this kind of case because you don't really get a lot of information and detail because you haven't got the victims dead. Like, you haven't got anyone to really explain.
Yeah, and the thing about gang stuff as well is that they're not going to be open.
No.
With talking about that.
Yeah. So she served 10 years and then she was deported to Trinidad, which I thought was a bit harsh. Like, I know...
Very harsh.
I know it was a murder, but... It's almost like, well, here's your punishment and then a bit more. Like, you can't come back to the UK. I didn't know that they necessarily did that. I don't know how long she'd lived in the UK.
Yeah, because if she'd lived there for as long as she could remember, even, that's really harsh.
I tried to look how long she lived in the UK, but I couldn't find much out about it. One of the killers had his term reduced only by about a year, but he apparently, I'm not sure if it's the lad who went to private school, but he... completed a lot of educational courses in jail and he took a lot of steps to reduce gang violence. So he showed a lot of remorse over time. Initially, he didn't show much remorse, but I think that is sort of the gang culture of you've got to be like, yeah, we did this killing. It's amazing. No one can mess with us. Mm. But I think over time, like, he did really think about it and thought about his role in Shaquille's murder. And then just some general information. So, like, there's some news reports recently about how stabbings among young black males in London have been consistently increasing, and obviously there's been so many stories of knife crime particularly, but apparently they're dropping, but they've put that down to stop and searches, and I don't know if that's really solving the issue. I guess if it's a short-term gain, like, fine, but then it just increases the hatred of the police, doesn't it? And then I watched a really good art exhibit in Oxford called The Same Road is a Different Road, and that's it shows videos of, and it uses real gang members, but it shows videos of a young black man walking down the street. It's kind of like on his face, like his point of view, and then like an older white woman, and they just talk about what they're thinking as they walk down the street. Like, oh, I used to go to that corner shop, that kind of thing. But you can see the difference in that it's the same place. Oh. But one's got all this gang violence connotations. They've got to look out for themselves. And there's like trouble around every corner. And one's like, oh yeah, I'm just going out doing my shopping. And that's really powerful. So if you get a chance to see that, it's called The Same Road as a Different Road. It's about a 10-minute video. But I'm not sure if it's still in the art gallery in Oxford. But it's by Penny Walcock. So... hit her up and be like, can I see your video, please? But yeah, sorry, that was a bit of a sad one, but I thought it was an interesting, slightly different one.
Thank you, Lucy.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, so it's my turn. And we're going to Liverpool.
Ooh, Liverpool.
Yes, which has pretty much always been an extremely busy port city centuries, and in the 1800s it was a major trading city that was on par with London, really, in terms of how big the population was and how bad the poverty was there as well. So there were lots of tenement houses that were formed sort of slum areas in the city, and so conditions were really poor and mortality rates were incredibly high. But with so many people just dying every day, that's the perfect cover for murder.
You'd think if it was really, if there's a lot of business coming in, people would be more wealthy. But I guess if everyone flocks there,
yeah, to scrabble. It's the same what you're just saying with London. Like the best is there, the richest is there. But then also you have that. This also has to come the other side of it with the people that can't afford that. Then so yeah, it becomes worse. The gap is bigger, isn't it? So stop me if you think you've heard this one before, because I think I have.
I thought that with mine, though. I was like, I'm maybe we've done this one.
So there were two sisters who were living in Liverpool in the 1880s, and they were known by their neighbours as Maggie and Catty. Their full names were Margaret Thompson and Catherine Flanagan, and they'd both been living at number 5 Skirving Street since they'd left their home in Ireland in the 1840s to escape the potato famine, which was a big deal. The Irish population has still never recovered.
I know, I think people make jokes about it, but it was actually horrendous, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, that was one of the... I was so shocked by that. I went to, I think it was the jail in Dublin, Kilmarnock, where they were saying that they gave the figures, I can't remember, but the population before the potato famine to now, it still hasn't reached the same just because of how horrendous it was. So they were landladies of their building. So a tenement house is a house that's basically just multi-occupancy. And they were the landladies there, but they weren't really like merry old, kind, matronly sort of women. They'd known hardship, clearly, and they were Irish, so they loved a drink, and they could even be violent when under the influence. They didn't have great reputations. They weren't cute, Maggie and Catty. They were tough women who wouldn't take shit.
Yeah.
So with them in their house, they had Catherine's adult son living with them. Then they also had two men who were widowers themselves, and each of those two men had their daughters with them. So there was a Thomas Higgins and a Patrick Jennings. So Catherine's adult son, John, he was a strong 22-year-old labourer. Unlike his mother, he was really well liked by the neighbours.
Unlike his mother, people actually liked him.
Yeah, they said that he was pleasant. He had quite an extrovert personality, and he was hardworking, rarely ill. I think he was probably supporting much of that household. But despite that, his mother kept making comments about how he's definitely getting weaker. And she began to worry in the December of 1880 that he wasn't going to live to see the new year.
Well, the 22-year-old?
Yeah.
Shit.
She was like, oh, I've got... he like was prime just carrying alive. Exactly, and he's carrying about his business, going working on building things and going about. And she's like, no, he's not going to survive.
Fucking hell.
Her premonition, so coincidentally, turned out to be right because John was taken ill, suddenly confined to his bed, and he had a very painful deterioration and died before Christmas Day. So his mother, because she'd been able to predict that he was soon going to reach the end of his life, she'd had the foresight to take out a life insurance policy for him. I think there was a lot less red tape back then as well.
Yeah.
So she quickly obtained the £70 payout for her son's death, which I, from my calculations, works out to about £8,000 today. And she began to drown her sorrows in the local pubs and just got blackout drunk for weeks on end. So then, in the October of 1882... a more happy event occurred out of number 5 Skirving Street, as Margaret Thompson, Catherine's sister, married the lodger Thomas Higgins.
Is that one of the widows?
Yes. So Thomas had this 8-year-old daughter from his first wife called Mary, but Margaret was not going to be stepmother for long.
I was going to say, is she getting in the way? Like,
I think so. She's a mouth to feed. So a month after her marriage to Thomas Higgins, his daughter began to suffer really severe stomach cramps and diarrhea, which within days led to her death.
Fuck.
So Margaret was quickly able to redeem a burial policy, so quite similar to a life insurance one, but to cover the costs of the funerals sort of thing, the burials, of £22 that she'd taken out in the few weeks. So she'd taken out this policy, she married him, the daughter died with months. So there's a space of 4 weeks.
Whoa.
Where she's married a guy with an 8-year-old and was like, I'm going to take out a burial policy. Fuck. On this child. So these deaths of Catherine's son Thomas and Margaret's stepdaughter Mary hadn't really, they'd passed without raising too much suspicion. Like I said, mortality rates were high, children might die. I think Thomas's was the worst, but his mum had said he'd been ill for so long.
Yeah.
But then the death of another member of this household was going to get people talking. So in January of 1883, so not long after Mary's death, the daughter of their lodger, 16-year-old Margaret Jennings, began to suffer with symptoms that were all too similar to those of John and Mary. So,
I mean, change it up.
Yeah. She had the cramps, she had the diarrhea, and she died. And yet, the unrelated by blood, marriage, anything, Catherine Flanagan, simply her landlady, cashed in a £50 life insurance policy that she'd taken out on the girl. So there must have been less bureaucracy, because how could you be like, I can't just pick a man in the street, can I? And be like, I want a life insurance policy on him.
Didn't we talk about ages ago when there were life insurance policy vending machines at one point? Like, people were just like, before they got on a train, I'll just take out a life insurance policy on that passenger there.
Because I guess you pay into it, don't you? But
I don't know.
But then if they die so quickly, then you get more out than you put in, don't you?
Yeah.
So Catherine Flanagan got £15 of the life insurance policy that she'd taken out on the 16-year-old Margaret Jennings. But this time, Catherine did the same again. She went to drink away the money straight away, but people were confronting her now. They couldn't believe the audacity of her benefiting from this girl's death and just going out on the piss.
Like, who is this girl to you? Just some fucking girl.
Yeah, and now you're here using the money just to get merry. And they would even go so far as to just accuse her openly of murdering Margaret. So the two sisters were worried that these accusations and rumours were going to cause an investigation. So they moved house, not too far. They went to a slightly different part of Liverpool, and they went to an apartment at 27 Ascot Street. So in September of 1883, so Margaret died just in the January, so not too long after, Margaret's new husband, Thomas Higgins, he also began to have stomach cramps. So this time they got a doctor involved to try and make everything seem legit. So he was seen by a doctor, and he thought that he recognised the symptoms as being dysentery, which was a common illness for people.
Is that like the shirts?
Yeah. So I remember doing it, like, it's like deadly shits.
Yeah.
Just where your body's completely purging. But apparently there was something going on with the whiskey production, and the cheapest whiskey that was being sold was, if people were drinking that regularly, it was actually causing them to have dysentery.
Right.
So he just assumed, oh, that's what it is. So he prescribed some treatments such as opium and castor oil. I can know which one I'd take. but he still suffered an agonizing death a couple of days after this visit. God. So this time, Margaret had taken out no less than 5 policies what? With different companies. And she went round collecting on all of them, which gave her a total payout of £100. So about maybe 10,000 or so. Unfortunately for the two sisters, a few weeks before his death, Thomas Higgins had told his brother Patrick how he'd had to throw some men out of his house because they'd come round to examine him over a burial policy. And so he's like, how dare you come round and try and check me? I'm so healthy. Why would you be having burial policies? I don't think he knew that it was his wife at that time, but he'd thrown them out and told his brother Patrick, just like, what is happening here? So this conversation had stuck with Patrick, and he began like going round the insurance companies and questioning them about the policies that were being taken out on his brother. And they obviously all informed him, well, it's his wife that's taken it. So he then went full Columbo, and he went and visited the doctor who was on the death certificate. And he went to ask about Thomas's symptoms and said, could these have been consistent with being poisoned? To which the doctor said, well, I guess they could. I mean, he said it was dysentery, but it could be the same as well. So Patrick then took all of this to the police. Several police officers showed up at Catherine and Margaret's house in Ascot Street on the day that Thomas Higgins' burial was supposed to happen. And they found, as was common, there was an open casket in the living room.
Yeah.
And the women were already drunk and sort of like dancing around, literally just having a party before the burial.
I just imagine like ones up there like straddling on like the sides of the coffin on a bucking bronco like, wee!
I think it was quite raucous for the 1880s. So Catherine Flanagan just admitted her guilt by legging it out the back door straight away. And Margaret was caught straight away, but she was told that they were going to carry out a post-mortem on Thomas. And the result of this showed that he died from arsenic poisoning. And Margaret was taken into custody. The police did a search of the house and they found liquid arsenic in the home, which is thought that it's most likely collected by, I think we talked before about arsenic was in loads of common household products.
Yeah.
At the time, it was even in some sweets, but not enough to kill anyone. So what people do was fly paper, which was really common to hang up, had a lot of it. So there was like a distilling process where you could extract the arsenic from it and get this poisonous liquid.
How did people find out about that? Because you couldn't exactly like Google it.
Yeah.
Like, how do I get arsenic out of this flypaper? Like,
I think you just a process of, can we boil it? Can we burn it? Can we leave it in the moonlight?
We're done. It's got to be one of these.
Yeah. Catherine, I quite like it. If you see an image of them, she's an old, I mean, she might not have been that old, but I think when you've survived the Irish potato famine, lived in the slums of Liverpool, I think you look older than your years. So she definitely looks old, and she's full bonnets, dresses, everything. And so I quite like the fact that she managed to not only run drunk and skirted out of this house, she managed to evade capture by the police for a week before she was arrested. Just like going into people's houses and asking to stay. So she'd managed to have some drinking friends that would look after her. So to strengthen their case, the bodies of Mary Higgins, 8-year-old Mary Higgins, 16-year-old Margaret Jennings, and the 22-year-old Thomas Flanagan were all exhumed for examination. All three of the bodies showed evidence of lethal doses of arsenic in them. So now, to be charged with multiple murders, Catherine Flanagan tried to make a deal. She said that she would turn on her sister and testify against her in court. I know, like, you'd think they came as a pair, they were together.
That's dark. Do you think you'd ever turn on your sister?
I don't think so. Well, especially not for this, because she knew she wasn't even offering to turn on her. She wasn't going to be let go. All that they would be able, would do would maybe not give her the death sentence and give her a prison sentence instead. So I suppose maybe life or death makes it a bit different. But it's like, you're still going down for murder no matter what, but I'm going to screw my sister over in the meantime. This was refused, though. I think they just wanted to get her too, especially seeing as she was the one that had run away, as the police obviously were like, not having this. But she still had another trick up her sleeve. So not giving up yet, Catherine Flanagan then offered to give up details of a wide system of women who were all involved in this murder-for-profit scheme.
Fucking hell.
So it's thought that around this time in Liverpool, there was like this gang of widowed women who all had their own roles in it and were just killing off people for insurance policies.
I mean, it's believable, seeing as it seemed fucking easy.
Yeah. I mean, you're only going to get caught if you've got a nosy brother-in-law somewhere. She listed 17 different murders that she knew of to the police.
Whoa.
And she named all of the co-conspirators. And she just really gave it up. So she said her sister, a woman called Bridget Begley, and Margaret Evans. These three were the ones who would administer the poison. And were
they got like little jobs then?
Oh yeah, it was very organised. Oh. Then there was Margaret Potter and Bridget Stanton and Emily Fallon. Their job was to be the policy writers who would go and sort out that side of it. And then a woman called Catherine Ryan, she was the one who was in charge of collecting and providing everyone with the arsenic.
Comedian actress Catherine Ryan?
Yeah, so it was an organised crime gang where they killed off people just to go out and have a good time. But I'm not quite sure why. Basically, the prosecution decided that they're not going to be able to prove all 17 of these deaths were murders, possibly because of the deterioration of the bodies or the length of time. So they were a bit like, shall we just not bother?
You kind of would, wouldn't you? Like,
it's going to be a lot of hard work.
And it's like old stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, all these women, who gives a fuck? I just don't think they were interested. So they believe, and it's thought that there genuinely was this conspiracy.
So they weren't like, women murder. Can't be organised.
Yeah, but the other women weren't charged. They just could not be bothered to investigate it. They were like, we've got you two. That'll do.
Yeah, that's a good day.
Yeah, so despite Catherine Flanagan just giving up absolutely everything, they weren't interested. And the two sisters were completely out of options. So they went on trial for the murder of Thomas Higgins only on Valentine's Day of 1884. The trial lasted for 3 days. But after a deliberation of 40 minutes, the women were both pronounced guilty and sentenced to death. So on March the 3rd of 1884, over 1,000 people flooded to Kirkdale Jail in Liverpool, where they saw Catherine Flanagan and Margaret Higgins hang.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. No, it is like just a normal poisony murder, but I think it's just the fact they're sisters and they're sort of...
Well, I wish they would have investigated the whole conspiracy. Yeah, I kind of
we'd have got another 10 minutes out of it.
There is that as well. Also, I want to know a little bit more about these women. I'm really bad for it. I know that I sympathise with them. They're killing people. Wrong. Got it. But I also like the thought that it's like all these women as a widow, and like everyone like no one's counting on you for anything. They think you're just like a burden to society, and they're taking that back, the power, and making it work for them.
It'd be a good comedy drama, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can at SlaughterThePod on Twitter, or you can join the Facebook group by typing S'Laughter onto Facebook. You can email us, slaughteredthepodcast@gmail.com. Patreon, Slaughter.
It's just patreon.com/slaughter, I believe.
Slaughter the Pod, I think.
If you go to Patreon, the website, and type in Slaughter Podcast, you'll find us 100%.
And you can check us out on Instagram. Lucy Alma Slaughter. I think we're probably fairly active on Instagram.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff on Instagram. If you like dogs, food, and murder, there's true crime stuff mixed in with dogs and food.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Have a lovely rest of your week. And remember,
listening to Slaughter doesn't make you a psycho. Yeah, you always dump it on me and you messed it up this time.
So hard. I didn't. You twisted it. I was going to give you a beat and then say it my part and then you said it and now I'm fucked. And stabbing people in the street doesn't necessarily, you might also be a victim of society. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.